Okay, welcome into the Charlie Epps Golf Hour presented by Insperity HR that makes a difference. How about a word from our good friends over at Insperity?
You know, Will, during the recent health and economic crisis in the United States and around the world, Insperity has helped their clients navigate through the chaos and ultimately rise above all challenges and produce a profit. And that's what business is all about. And their motto, their mission statement is helping businesses succeed so communities can prosper. So if you're in the small business world and you want some more help and a different look at what you're doing, give Insperity a call or log on to Insperity.com, and I guarantee you, you'll be very impressed with how you'd be treated, because their chairman knows how to treat people. Now they have grown to over 4,000 employees. Incredible. 0 to 4,000. That's incredible. So take it from me, Insperity is the number one company in the United States.
Welcome aboard as we welcome in one of the great architects in golf right now. He's worked on incredible designs such as Atlanta Athletic Club, Oak Hill in San Antonio, Oklahoma City Golf Club, and Oak Tree National. And for our ESPN Houston listeners, you'll be excited to hear about his recent project in renovating the great Braeburn Country Club. He was an All-American on Oklahoma's 1989 National Championship team. His name is Tripp Davis, and he joins us now. Tripp, congratulations on 29 years of success at Tripp Davis and Associates. Thanks for taking some time to spend a little time with Charlie and I today.
Yeah, enjoy it. We did this in Houston, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, really, it was August 7th, 2021.
Oh, really?
Okay. A little longer than that. You had just started at Braeburn.
Okay. Well, that I can't be more proud of the way that project came together. Have you been over to see it yet, Charlie?
Yes, I sure have, and congratulations. It's actually one of my favorite golf courses because it's so traditional in so many different ways. And I talked to Kenny Mack, and I talked to the general manager, and you should be congratulated on what you've done, because it just looks so much better. It doesn't look that much different. Mm-hmm. But because the grasses from my point of view, you just enhance the property.
That was the intent. Absolutely. I mean, it was had a real classic feel to it to begin with. And, what we tried to do was take away the little things that took away from that classic feel. It had a few too many trees, so it kind of felt enclosed, and we took a few trees out to help with getting the site to feel more open. It had some mounds on it that were a little bit more, modern to that time frame, '91 when they last redid it. So it kind of stripped the clutter down and then brought a little bit more of a classic traditional element to the shape of greens and bunkers and so forth.
Well, I spent many years as a club pro at golf clubs, and they have what's called the grounds committee, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden after 25 years, the course has been redesigned by the grounds committee, because they want to put a tree in here and a tree there. Anyways, it's so much better when they let a guy like you, that number one is a great player, been there, done that, and you understand the membership and their yardage needs, not these incredible players of today that are hitting 8 irons 190 yards. They're isn't that amazing that the ball is?
It's hard to to really think about how you design for that player. I mean, but at the same time, have a golf course that the rest of the members can enjoy in some way, shape, or form. And I think the best person to look to, or the best design work to look to, and how to accomplish that is Pete Dye. Yeah. I think Pete, his golf courses today, even though they've added a little bit of length to them and so forth, but they're still really good tests for the best players. But the way Pete put it to me, I got to talk to him about it one time, And he said, you know, I create small margins for error for the better players that have got to take more aggressive lines to play well. And I create wider margins for error for the average to higher handicap player that can take more comfortable routes. And the routes that if a better player took them, they couldn't shoot around par.
Yeah, it's so true. I've been lucky to play quite a few of his golf courses, but in talking with him and trying to understand is the angles at which he puts certain things at certain times of the hole, you know, whether it be the fairway bunker, the green, a tree here, tree there. I was just down to Casa de Campo in the Dominican Republic, one of his early great golf courses. It's a great piece of property, but they gave him, you know, has 8 holes right up against the ocean, and it's just magnificent. But my favorite golf course is the golf club in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, that one there, that'll make you play. So
that's substance at its best. I mean, that's, when we get asked, I'm actually, the project I'm on down here in Florida is old Pete Dye that we're redoing.
But you're at Gasparilla Inn?
Right.
That's a favorite of President George W. Bush.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a long history there. The family that owns it, Will Farish was George Bush Sr.'s Secretary of Commerce, or maybe, yes. You know, I've got something along those lines. He's actually from Houston, the Farish family.
Yeah, he was a member of Houston Country Club when I was there. And he loved golf, and he loved horses, and he liked presidents.
Yeah. So, so his son, Bill, is kind of overseeing things now, both the horses and the and Gasparilla. They live in Kentucky now.
Yes.
How is it looking after Hurricane Ian?
Well, that's why we've started when we did. We were not supposed to do this project until 2024. And after the hurricane, I met everyone down there, and it was going to cost $1.5 million, $1.6 million to just get it back open. And that would have been in the middle of their season. And Mr. Farish said, you know, if we can put it together, let's go now. And luckily, most of the golf course builders don't work in Florida in the winter because all the courses are open and people are using them. And so it was not too difficult to find a really good contractor, find a good irrigation contractor. And so we started January 3rd. And we're able to, get it permitted as hurricane repair, which it, you know, in large measure is. It's just the project is, we're changing a little bit of the design as we go through the process of regrassing. Because after the hurricane, the irrigation system was fried and, they lost a lot of turf. And so it worked out pretty well that way because it's going to give us 3 more months in construction than we would have normally had. So it's good. It worked out well.
And Tripp, you talked about Pete Dye a little bit. For me, growing up wanting to be a broadcaster, I was engulfed by books by Jim Nantz, Pat Summerall, John Madden, Jim Gray. Did you have that type of interest in golf architecture as a kid, or did it develop later on in life?
No, I was really kind of into it when I was a kid. I started playing in some tournaments when I was 11. And I don't know if it was that summer or the summer after, but I played 9 hole tournaments around Atlanta. We got to play some decent courses for sure. But I would get my mom to drive me out there because I wanted to go do a yardage before the 9 hole match. So every once in a while, I got to go and do a yardage book, and I became really kind of enthralled with thinking the way, you know, trying to figure out how to strategically work my way around the golf course. And so, and in the summers, when I was, I think it was 14 was the first year that I did it. When I was 14, East Lake was not doing very well economically, you know, financially. And so they had these summer memberships for kids. And so I got to play out there and learned about Donald Ross. And then I played in the North and South that summer. and the North South Junior. So we played like the Pioneers number five, which was an old Ross. And so I became really enthralled with studying how he designed courses to make you want to play them. You know, how you figured out what he was trying to do. So that I really kind of wanted to do it when I was a kid. But when I went to the University of Oklahoma to play, they told me that that wasn't one of the, you know, getting a landscape architecture degree or, you know, engineering degree was not one of the degrees I could do and play Division I sports. I went back to school and got my master's after I played at Oklahoma. And, you know, Charlie, I had a really good short game in college, and that's what got me through, but I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a driver. One of my coaches actually said, you know, if you couldn't get it up and down out of a tomato can, you couldn't score.
Well, that's why, you know, you became such a good short game player with that driver. Sometimes, you know, there's just people that can't really control it. Was it more a directional problem or just lack of distance?
It was both.
You were sneaky, you know, short?
Short and crooked never did you much good. And my senior year, I actually drove it better. As you well know, I mean, when you drive it well, you can really play the golf course. That spring of my senior year, Danny Snyder, you know Danny?
Yes.
He gave me a little tip about setup.
Great
and
teacher.
just letting it go. And I drove the ball pretty well that spring. I hit it in my irons fairly well. But, you know, when you're having to punch out from trees and just trying to get it around the green and get it up and down, that was kind of my game back then. But
if you'd have this modern day equipment and that new and the new golf balls, you'd be 40 yards longer.
Yeah, well, I think I'm at least 30 yards longer. I'm 55 now, and I think I hit it 30 yards longer than I did then. Now,
isn't that incredible? One question: when you're looking at a golf course, and you know your average handicap 18 that you're taking in consideration, or do you really just say, okay, I'm just going to build this for the better players? What's your attitude there?
It depends on the project. I mean, you know, when we redid Oak Tree National, the main intent was really to get it ready to host the 2014 Senior Open. And then we've done a little work to it since, you know, trying to get it ready for the 2027 Senior Open. And, you know, and we do work on courses at times that are for tournaments. But Braeburn, for example, I mean, you know, we didn't design that to host events. We didn't design it to be fun. And so I've always, you know, ever since I had that conversation with Pete about small margins for error and large margin, you know, wider margins for error for the, you know, the average player, that clicked with me as a player because, the next time I went out to play, I can't remember where I played that next day, actually. We were at a conference and I thought about it. And I said, you know, he's exactly right. On a good golf course, to play well, you've got to take on smaller margins for error. The hard, hard golf courses, the ones we think of penal golf courses or the tournament courses, the championship courses, don't have those wider margins for error. And so you'll rarely, you know, like for instance, you know, some of the older championship courses, you always saw a bunker front left, bunker front right.
Right.
Tough approach, green with movement in it and so forth. You'll rarely see me bunker a green on both sides. For that reason. And so, and I'm, you know, I'm apt to give the average player room to miss, and not in a severe way. I actually like shortcut areas around greens that are fairly subtle because they can be like an extension of the green and, gives them the opportunity to miss if they need to. So that's, you know, around greens and off fairways, you know, trying to be as wide as we can, at the distances that those players are going to hit it. And so, you know, we've done a lot of work on understanding how far each of the groups that we're designing for hit it. And so, you know, we'll have a tee where our driving distance is 500 feet, one that might be 625, one that's 725 feet. I mean,
yes,
you know, and just depending on what we're, you know, looking for. And so that's how you're looking at trying to put that player in a position in the fairway where they can play the next shot, and you give them room to do that. When the emphasis is on fun and so forth, you compromise or you favor the player having room to play versus it getting tight. Because sometimes, you know, when you're setting up your tee shots, and you're setting up the approaches into the greens, the driving area for the better player is the same place as it is for Mrs. Jones playing from the very forward tee. So you don't want to, you know, you can choose to tighten that up if you're trying to make the golf course more difficult, or you widen it out if you want it to have more fun. And so we'll always err on the side of the golf course being more fun, unless it's specifically for tournament golf.
How about rough? What's your philosophy? Can you give the instructions to the superintendent that the rough around the greens is just very, very light, or do you care?
No, I do. We actually, after every project we do, we'll let the golf course kind of settle in and mature and let the players play it a bit. And, you know, and I'll make a couple of visits back. I've been like to Braeburn a couple of times. I've been back there just to see how players are playing it. And then we'll start to dial it in a little bit. And we have a pretty good idea going in, Charlie, as to whether or not we want, you know, a taller rough height or have the ability to do that. But, you know, for most golf courses, we're generally looking at your typical fairway heights, whether that's at 400ths of an inch or half an inch. And then in the roughs, it depends a little bit on grass type, but with Bermudas, you know, I like to see it between 1¾ inches and 2 inches at most.
Yeah.
You know, if you have interesting greens with angles, that's enough in the fairways to make it difficult, because you're actually more prone to get some jumper lies out of that than you would 3 inches. At 3 inches, you know, your better player even is going to get really conservative. And at 3 inches, Mrs. Jones can't find her ball.
Yeah.
So there are certain types of, you know, we do a little bit of work in the north where when you're dealing with fescue, you know, turf type tall fescues or bluegrass, where you got to mow it at 2½ to keep it alive. But they also aren't quite as penal at 2½ as Bermuda would be.
But one thing that I'm impressed with the better players is their swing speed is so high, 110, 120 miles an hour. They can get it almost out of any rough. I mean, that yeah. To me is, and with the clubs being a little longer, they got more leverage, and so they almost spin the ball out of the rough nowadays with the way the equipment and the ball is and the club head speed.
They do, and you know, there's certain places where I think Bermuda rough has the ability to be a penalizing factor. Mm-hmm. The cool season roughs, not as much. You know, like when they played the best example I can think of, you know, right now is Wingfoot when they played the Open there recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they had the rough at 5½ inches in places, and it didn't really faze DeChambeau much.
Well, his swing speed was just ridiculous.
Yeah, and so you can get the club through that a little easier, and you know, like you're right. I mean, the USGA has done some tests on, even with the new grooves, I mean, they can spin it as much out of the rough as they can the fairway with the short
iron. Yeah.
The difference sometimes is can be reading that lie, because every once in a while you'll get that lie where you get enough grass between the ball and the club face that it'll jump on you.
Yeah.
And especially out of Bermuda. And so I think, you know, it depends on the event, you know, like I think, you know, certain tournaments, I think a little bit of rough helps. I think design is more important in a lot of ways, in that if you can put the player in a position where I almost want a player to feel like they can fire the flag from the right rough over a bunker to a tuck pin. If they feel like they can do that, they're actually bringing a lot more trouble into play than if they get conservative.
Yeah, well, that's great.
When you left a course like Atlanta Athletic Club, the Riverside course where Martin Keimer won the stroke play portion of the 14 USAM, do you leave instructions for the superintendent team on a perfect example, Charlie's question, rough. Do you leave those kind of instructions for, you know, rough length for the day-to-day member versus whether they have a championship?
Well, it's a little bit of a collaboration. It's not so much instruction as it is, this is what we were designing for, and let's see how that works. And I stay in touch enough with projects we've done to where we'll go back and see how things are working. When we have tournaments coming up, it kind of gets out of their control too. The USGA is going to be playing a few events coming up at Atlanta Athletic Club at Oak Hill in San Antonio. They're playing the Senior Am there. Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club that we did in 2019 has got the women's four ball coming up. So that when the USGA comes in, they kind of set a lot of those parameters. I've been fortunate here recently that there's enough of those events, and they've called me and said, what did you design this for? In tournament situation, what kind of rough are you thinking mm-hmm. about? What factors and were you thinking of in terms of heights? But they largely will kind of take control of that. The PGA, I'm not supposed to say that actually. There's some PGA tournament or PGA of America events coming up on one of the courses we're doing or have done, and they'll take control of it. They'll set green speeds. They'll even set green firmness, rough heights, everything.
Okay, let's take a quick break from the golf to tell you more about our friends over on the Swing Sound app, where you can find it on the App Store or Google Play. And listen, golfers, one thing that all amateurs and weekend players struggle with is consistent rhythm and tempo in their golf swing. You either swing the club too slow or too quick, especially under pressure when you have a big putt to win your weekend skins game or a late afternoon match against a buddy. And what Marius Filmotter, the founder of Swing Sound Golf and the founder of Sam Putt Lab, has figured out is that almost all bad golf shots are caused by bad tempo, because study results show that all good golfers share a common and consistent rhythm when they swing. The other feature of the Swing Sound app that I love is that the audio helps create your tempo. Most of these metronome apps play a rhythmic sound that sounds like an alarm or a school bell, but Filmotter has worked with some of the best audio engineers in the world to create sounds that are comforting to your ear as you use the Swing Sound app to master the rhythm in your golf swing. Do yourself a favor and take control of your golf performance and establish your swing tempo by downloading the Swing Sound app, available for only $4.99 on the App Store or Google Play. Okay, back to Tripp Davis.
I think it's neat that you do what you do. But are you ready for your own piece of land to design something?
Well, Charlie, I did Old American in Dallas. That was the last new course that I did, and it opened in 2010. And it was kind of already in the works before the 08-09 meltdown. And so, if I don't get to do another new course, I think I'll be okay with that. There's a lot of fun that I have in working with these clubs. You get to know the people, you develop some relationships. It's certainly much more of an interactive process than when doing a new course. When you're doing a new golf course, you're pretty much working with your contractor, the golf course superintendent. They probably don't even have a pro on just yet, like we did at Old American. Typically the ownership group has got one person assigned to work with you. And so, it's when you're working at Braeburn, Oklahoma City Golf and Country Club, down here at Gasparilla, like today, I talked to about 30 members down here today at lunchtime. That's fun. That really makes the process to me, it's more enjoyable when you have that interaction and you develop those relationships. You don't get that quite as much with new courses.
Our older architects, I know some of them, they don't even want to go to a greens committee meeting, and they don't want any ladies tea and so on and so forth. But
well, you do get a little scar tissue. I've always kind of had the mindset that I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed that. Be perfectly honest, I've been to plenty of board meetings and greens committee meetings when I came out of there, not wanting to go do that again anytime soon. But for the most part, it's pretty good. We've been really fortunate to have a lot of good clubs we work with. Braeburn was outstanding. The people there were really supportive, very good to work with, appreciative of what we did. And that's all that you could ask for.
Yeah.
All the people I've talked to are very, very happy, and they enjoy playing the golf course again. So, well, we're going to have to go over there and play now that Kenny Mack's not there, but we'll get over there and play it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. From what I've gathered, I'm looking forward to, being more creative around the greens. I thought before the redo, there wasn't much challenge present around the greens, and now you have the collection areas around the course. You can putt it around the greens, from what I've heard. You can test it out with a spinny chip, kind of a do or die shot. And I've also heard that there's just a lot more room for new pin placements.
Well, there are. I mean, it's we use Northbridge Bermuda, which is a little bit more dense than 419, especially at a lower mowing height. The ball sits up on top of it just a little bit better. And so around the greens, you do have some options, but most of the areas around those greens that are shortcut are subtle enough to where you can put a hybrid on it. You can put a putter on it. You can try to hit a spinny coming off of it. I'm not as good with that anymore, Charlie, as I used to be.
You like the Texas wedge trip?
No, that's what Will's talking about. He's playing with those 25-year-old nerves, and I got 78-year-old nerves, and they're about worn to a, so that chili dip comes into play more often than I like.
Yeah, give me the putter. I played in a tournament not long ago down at Dye Preserve, a great golf course in Jupiter, Florida, as a junior senior event, my first event as a senior. And I'm about 30 yards out in front of the green. I'm on a little downslope on that kind of wet, thin 419. And I grabbed the putter, and my partner was like, "What are you doing?" And I said, I know the result of that if I use a wedge.
It's a cruel game when you age.
Yeah.
And as you know, Braeburn sits on a very small piece of property. My second favorite of your designs is actually the Trilogy in Ocala, Florida. I was lucky enough to play some junior golf there. And that course only sits on about 50 acres of land. Right. I'm just wondering if you saw any comparisons in those projects and what the challenge is when you have a smaller piece of property.
Well, not so much because they were small pieces of property, from a comparison standpoint, and they both had very different objectives from the owner's perspective. And so when you're working with a smaller piece of property, Ocala Preserve is a little bit different in that the design was based around it being a really small piece of property. But when you're working with a smaller piece of property that's 18 holes and you've got a practice facility to include and so forth, which happens on a lot of older golf courses, but not only because the older golf courses didn't take into consideration, someone missing it 50 yards right or left like the can today. And what happens a lot of times with older golf courses, which happened at Braeburn, is they sell off little pieces of the property around the edges so it gets even smaller. Yeah. And so the biggest thing you have to be aware of, which we had to be aware of at Ocala as well, is safety. And making sure that you're not doing anything that is going to make, on a renovation or restoration redesign, you're not going to make it any worse than it already is. And do anything you can to try to mitigate some of the potential for conflict with balls and so forth. The way that Braeburn is routed, there's not a lot of that. And there was also a good many mature trees that we had, that could separate holes. So we really didn't have too much in the way of that kind of conflict. I'm trying to think off the top of my head the biggest issue we have is really 10 and 11 around the driving range. But other than that, it's it works pretty well. There's not a spot where it is too big of an issue. I think they did a really good job in spacing out landing areas well, which we kept. We didn't do any major. We didn't really do any rerouting. We moved some tees and greens a little bit, but you know, the original design was spaced pretty well.
It all looks really well. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm curious about your thoughts on the new short game or the new short course craze, you know, is what they're calling it. They're popping up all over the place. For our listeners in Houston, I'm kind of talking about the short par three course like East River Nine that just opened up. And Tripp, this is a short course in Houston where the longest shot is only about 145 yards. Have any of these projects been brought to your desk, or would you prefer just working on traditional designs?
No, I we've done a handful of them so far, and we've got a couple that are going to be down the road. One would be a six hole where it's more of a pitch and putt than it is a par three for kids. But I think those have a great ability to give the kids a place to go learn how to play the game, for one. If you can incorporate the short course, kind of like what we did at Ocala, where, you know, you can also incorporate par fours into it. When we did the practice facilities for the University of Oklahoma golf team, we've got four greens that are on about 4.5 acres. And we were able to do it in such a way where you can play a bunch of different shots. You can play two par fours if you want. The thing I like about that, from not only getting kids the ability to go play, I think it also helps guys like Charlie teach how to feel your way when you're playing the game. It's one thing to stand on a driving range and work on technique. It's a totally different thing to get out and see shots, feel shots, know how to take it from the range to the golf course. And that's been a long-held challenge that a lot of golfers have. And it's the difference between technique and feel.
I go with Jackie Burke's theory. Nobody needs a 60-degree wedge. Let's see a little pitching wedge and hit a pitch and run, chip and run. You know, the game's supposed to be played on the ground, and they all want to hit it high. And, you know, it's learn to chip and pitch before you get a 60. Maybe a 55, Tom Watson and Seve Ballesteros, two of the great wedge players ever, that's the most loft they had in their bag.
Yeah,
55 degrees.
And that's the type of feel shots that those short courses help you learn how to play.
Yeah.
And you got to design them in such a way that works. You know, you've got to give the player the ability to learn how to play shots, you know, bump them along into the greens and so forth.
Was that the idea at the Pine at Green Tree?
It's yes, to a large extent, was, you know, trying to play some little bump and run shots into those greens. You know, and I in some places, well, we're looking at these being practice facilities part of the time, and then courses is another part of the time. You know, at Green Tree, there was not enough room to do an extensive short game practice area. And so we did that in such a way that, you know, sometimes they can use it for short game practice. Sometimes you can play it. The membership has gotten where they like to play it more than anything. So we're actually going to take a little more land and try to build a short game area because they like playing it more than they do practicing on it. But I think they're great. I think going forward, we did a four hole short course at Willowbrook and Tyler. And we did it before we did the golf course. And for a number of reasons, we did the golf course in nine hole phases. And so, you know, I went back for 2 years after we'd opened the short course. And almost every time I drove in, you'd see kids over there playing, or kids over there with one of the assistant pros. And that's what I hope they really serve the purpose for more than anything.
Hoping to have a match with him one of these days at Braeburn and have fun and see that game. That did Greg Gross really help you a lot?
No.
He and I put together a real important collegiate tournament, the All-American at Redstone, and it was fun working with him. He's a fun guy, good sense of humor.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the short game and putting was not something I needed help with. And that was his strong suit.
Okay.
But, you know, we had guys on our team that I think he really helped a lot of the guys on the team with their short games. You know, and I had more of a maybe an innate feel for it, and so. But Doug Martin, that played on our team, had putting issues on a fairly regular basis, and Greg helped him quite a bit. Greg, you know, was kind of taught that grip where you get your hands a little more close together, kind of like a Bobby Lock grip, and you pop it more. So he taught kind of that Bobby Lock pop hook stroke. With the modern greens today, it's not as applicable as it was even in the late 80s. But
yeah,
Greg was a great short game teacher, very good organizer. You know, he got us in a position to win a national championship.
Yeah, no. And he was really great with organizing the tournament we ran at Redstone. But appreciate you coming on today and continued success with all what you do, and get back to Houston. Give us a call.
Well, I will. And I'm planning on being back sometime this spring. And so I'll get in touch with you guys, and we'll make some time to go play.
Yeah, come join us in studio too, and then we'll go play.
All right.
Trip, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure, and we'll hear from you again soon. Thanks for joining us today.
Take care.